Health and Social Services, call to order. It's March 3rd, 3 o'clock. First time I think we started on time. That's great. Representative Seaton, Representative Heron, Representative Coghill, and myself, Representative Keller presiding. For the record, Representative Holmes is excused from today's meeting, and the meeting is being teleconferenced. Don't forget your cell phones if you got them on. The what our desire today is to move HB 26. It goes from here to the Finance Committee and also here SCR 1 and hopefully move it because it's a time-sensitive matter. So that's what's before us. So public testimony was closed on HB 26, and so that's before us here on the table, and I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I know we adopted the CS, but I would move that we go back to the original bill. That would be House Bill 26, the R version.
Hearing no objection, we're back. The original bill is before us. What is the LS number on that?
So it's LS 0142/R. It's the original version of the House Bill number 26.
Okay, thank you. Is there any comments from the committee on HB 26, the content of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, last time I just talked about the effective date issue, and the caps on this particular program are pretty significant. So I think this is something that we're going to end up doing for a good long while. And each year we pass a budget, we're going to have to deal with this. And so it is true, though, it is going to be a continued question. With that, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, that does sound good.
Pretty good promotion,
Mr. Chairman. I support the adoption of the original original House version, House Bill version, and the reason that that I encouraged the adoption of the CS was to the other version was so that we could have a lively debate, which did happen in the committee, and I would look forward to a motion to move this from committee.
Thank you, Representative Heron. I just would also like to comment that in general, in broad terms, I like sunsets, but being reminded that this one will be before us regularly, I'm very happy with this getting this important bill moved. So I would entertain a motion if there's one there.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill 26 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Object for a question.
Object, Representative Seaton.
Had we gone through the full adoption of the original bill?
Yes. Representative Seaton, we adopted the CS last time. Now Representative Coghill has asked us to go back to the original, and that puts the original bill before us, as I understand. Did I miss something?
And Mr. Chairman, I heard the motion to do that. I didn't hear an adoption of the motion. That's what just to make sure that we got there, I just wanted to clarify. If we did that, that's fine. But if we didn't, we needed to.
So it's been moved and no objection that the bill before us that we're about to move is HB number 26, and it repeals the preventive and restorative adult dental services. And so the version that we are moving is 26LS0142/Romeo. I think that should cover it.
Spoken like a pilot.
So the bill is moved. Individual recommendations. Next before us, we have SCR 1. Do we have somebody here to talk to us about what SCR 1 is? If you would, identify yourselves for the record and tell us what we have before us. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Trevor Fulton. I'm staff for Senator Lisa McGuire. Senator McGuire sends her regards. She would be here to present her bill herself, but she is on a plane down to D.C. as we speak. I also have with me Danny Carlson from Senator McGuire's office as well, and she will be presenting SCR1, her first bill before the committee.
Good afternoon. How are you today? Again, my name is Danny Carlson. I work in the office of Senator Lisa McGuire. Forgive me, this is the first time that I am presenting anything to a committee, so if something goes wrong, just blame my newbiness. So it's nice to see you all today.
If it makes you feel any more comfortable, I'm just learning how to use this thing, so go ahead and relax.
Wow. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
Well, SCR1 targets the purpose of recognizing March 2009 as Traumatic Brain Injury Month in the state of Alaska. It's amazing how fragile our brains are and how susceptible each and every one of us are to TBI. Some people call it an invisible disease. Usually people don't care about TBIs until it's too late. We're hoping to raise awareness about this because this has a huge, huge impact on the lives of everyday Alaskans. Over 800 TBIs are reported annually here in the state of Alaskans, the state of Alaska, and an estimated 12,000 Alaskans over time have suffered from a TBI. And likely now the statistics are higher because these are actually old statistics. And when it comes to our military veterans returning from combat deployment, and I'll address that later, it's a huge, serious issue. The Brain Injury Association of America recognizes March of every year as Traumatic Brain Injury Awareness Month, and so this would be an act of cohesion along with that main national organization to show our concern and to show solidarity with such an important cause. About the incidence of military personnel with traumatic brain injuries, it's definitely on the rise. Actually, today I spoke with couple of folks from the Warrior Transition Unit over at Fort Richardson. Warrior Transition Units are organizations that are, rather, it's a military unit actually in a military hospital that's designated to the rehabilitation and coordination of care for people who come back from combat deployments and might have suffered something. The incidence of TBIs are definitely, as I said, on the rise, and they actually report that at least 1 in 5 people that come back from a combat deployment have signs of a TBI. You know, and they actually told me today, you can actually attain a Purple Heart if you've suffered a TBI in combat deployment. I did not put 2 and 2 together, and I'm very familiar with military issues, and if you can receive a Purple Heart from a TBI, I mean, that just says so much about how incredibly horrendous these injuries can be. The Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. reports that about 60% of people arriving from Iraq have a TBI from things as simple as a severe fall and as horrible as recovering from an attack by an IED if you're in a vehicle or if you're on patrol or from any other kind of blast. TBI screening at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland says that 83% of wounded Marines come back with some kind of temporary or permanent brain damage. It's really interesting because you may not physically see the effects of a TBI, but you can see it when interacting with somebody. And it's important for the state of Alaska because it is one of the leading causes of death for young people in the state. And as I said earlier, it happens so much in this state. We're actually top 3, if not number 1, in the nation for incidents of TBIs. So I really urge you to strongly take a look at this and to pass it out. And as you said, Mr. Chair, it's time sensitive. It's March. Let's make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the representatives of the sponsor?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the senator for bringing this forward. One of the things that pops to mind, and you or those who are testifying, who are listening in, maybe help me understand. The awareness is one thing, and us proclaiming awareness is another thing. But what is actually going to happen as far as education, promotion? What kind of activities do we do locally, whether it's for snow machiners, bicyclers, we have a lot of extreme sports. help me understand what is going to happen as far as public information goes.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill. We do have Jill.
Identify yourself for the record.
Again, for the record, my name is Trevor Fulton. We do have available online Jill Hodges, Executive Director of the Alaska Brain Injury Network. I know they have several ongoing campaigns to increase education and increase awareness on traumatic brain injuries around the state. I would prefer she field that question rather than I. I think she'd do a better job explaining those programs.
Okay, let's go to public Representative Sisson. Did you have something?
We're waiting for public testimony before hearing from Jill. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Okay, mm-hmm. Great.
Just for clarification, we have SCR number one on the table in front of us, and it's 26LS0268/alpha. And so when we get to the discussion of the bill, that is the one that's on the table. Okay, Jill, are you online? And I'm sure if you heard the comments, please go ahead. Identify yourself for the record first, please.
Yes, my name is Jill Hodges, and I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Brain Injury Network. I'm here in Anchorage at the LIO, and it's kind of going in and out, the volume is. So I'm able to hear most of it, but if I miss something and it's obvious, please let me know.
Okay, Jill, you're coming in on this end really well. So.
Okay, great. And through the chair, I'd like to answer Representative Coghill's question relating to what is going to happen throughout the month of March. And a few things I'd like to report on. The Brain Injury Network has been working really hard to advocate to our large providers in our community to understand the importance, I guess really the public health issue of brain injury. And so we've been working with Providence and also the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. And just last week, ANTHC, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and the Brain Injury Network co-sponsored a press conference launching March is Brain Injury Awareness Month here in Anchorage. And the Anchorage mayor, acting mayor Matt Klayman, was able to join Senator Murkowski and Senator Begich and Senate representatives. And so that's a start to try to work through the media. But I think on a bigger issue, we must work with the tribal systems, the military, and the state. And I know that ANTHC is going to be sending out newsletters and kind of web blogs on brain injury this month. They're having meetings with their tribal directors, and they're still trying to increase awareness among their own organizations that 34% of TBIs each year are Alaska Native, and many of our returning service members are going to be coming home, and many of them live in rural communities as well. And we really hope that people will speak up and start talking about brain injury more, just so that it becomes, I don't want to say a regular disability, but that it's on the radar as cancer and HIV and AIDS. Brain injury does occur at rates higher than those other conditions. So that's the answer, Representative Coghill's question. Was there another question from Representative Sisna that I might have heard?
Mr.
Go ahead, Representative Sisna.
Thank you. This is a critical issue that I know has kind of lagged behind in terms of recognition of the public, and I know that being able to do this kind of effort is really is a good way to get the word out. So the thing that I keep on wondering about on this issue is kind of the cost to the health systems of these kinds of injuries, and of course with the with our service people coming back from Iraq, it's really important to have pieces in place to take care of them. And so if you can just tell me more about that part, I'd love to know.
Yes, and through the chair, the answer represents this question relating to cost and impact. Nationally, they've been studying the impact of brain injury. In 2000, they reported that brain injury direct and indirect costs are around $60 billion nationally each year. And what we know is that early intervention, as simple as being screened for brain injury and having access to the appropriate resources, really do lead to better outcomes. If people do not have access to those services, they are more likely to become substance abusers, divorced, homeless, and higher rates of just making bad decisions, really. And I would encourage the state of Alaska to do a cost analysis on this population to really track how much it's costing the state to have people with brain injuries not served in a rehab or residential setting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Bill.
And through the chair, I did have just a few more things I just wanted to point out. If I could, is now a good
time? Jill, just a second, because we had a couple more questions, I believe. Representative Coghill and then Representative Seaton.
Actually, I'll defer to Representative Seaton since I've already chimed in. So,
thank you, Ms. Chairman and Representative Coghill. I noticed that we have, and I'm not sure if this is for the testifier or the sponsor, so whoever is most appropriate, but we have a declaration of Traumatic Brain Injury Awareness Month by the governor, and we have the sponsor statement dealing with traumatic brain injury and TBI, and the bill is not talking about traumatic brain injury, but it's talking about Brain Injury Awareness Month. Is there a can somebody explain the reason why we're why this is different and not parallel with the governor's proclamation, and why it's the sponsor statement is talking about traumatic brain injury, and this just deals with brain injury?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, again, Trevor Fulton. Excuse me. The difference between the governor's executive proclamation making March Traumatic Brain Injury Awareness Month and this resolution, which makes March Brain Injury Awareness Month, is just a difference in wording between how the governor chose to approach it and how Senator McGuire chose to approach it. This is the same resolution with very minor changes that she's been sponsoring for several years now. And that resolution from the first time she sponsored it was just Brain Injury Awareness Month, even though the focus has always been on traumatic brain injury awareness, and that's what she's been using it for. She's hoping that it is used for is to raise awareness about traumatic brain injury specifically, not all brain injuries. Perhaps that's something the sponsor needs to consider changing in order to make it either comport with the governor's office and making it specifically Traumatic Brain Injury Awareness Month. But as it is right now, it is the same resolution we sponsored and passed last year, which is Brain Injury Awareness Month. I hope that answers your question, Representative Seaton.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
And then again, I'd just like to follow up the sponsor statement. I'm trying to get a clarification. Is there a difference between the two? The sponsor statement talks about traumatic brain injury, TBIs, and I'm just trying to figure out if there's another category of brain injury that this addresses that's not traumatic brain injury, or is it just simply a terminology difference?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, there is a distinction between brain injuries and traumatic brain injuries. All traumatic brain injuries are brain injuries. Not all brain injuries are traumatic brain injuries. Other examples of brain injury which are non-traumatic would include stroke or fetal alcohol syndrome, and calling it Brain Injury Awareness Month would also include those, although, as you point out, the sponsor statement specifically addresses traumatic brain injuries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
This could be for the sponsor or for anybody who knows the answer to this. In the whereas on page 1, line 14, it It says most cases of traumatic brain injury are preventable, and I'm glad to hear that, but I need to know a little more, and that's one of the reasons why I was asking what are some of the plans, because I think that the awareness part is a significant part, but we would like to know what the prevention model is, if we even have one. Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Mr. Ahead, Chairman, excuse me, I again would prefer to defer to Jill Hodges to answer that question.
Jill, do you have a response to that?
Sure, I have a short response through the chair. I think it was Representative Coghill. There are certain policy decisions that have been made in the past that really have lowered the rates of brain injury, and I could point out the primary seatbelt law introduced in 2003. Since 2001, basically, motor vehicle accidents causing TBI have decreased 38%, and we think wearing seatbelts has a lot to do with that. At the moment, though, if you look at the statistics over the last 5 years, 56% of Alaskans in a motor vehicle accident receiving a TBI were still not wearing their seatbelt. In relation to ATV and snow machine accidents, it's 69% aren't wearing helmets. And the Brain Injury Network, our vision always begins with prevention, but we do understand that the state of Alaska and the tribal systems have injury prevention programs, and we just really want to advocate to them the importance of those two things, seatbelts and helmets, and then also the booster seat really does decrease brain injury.
So
I think in relation to prevention, I think the state, together, we have a lot of work that can be done to help prevent a lot of these injuries.
And follow up, Representative Coghill.
Thank you. And so we have had some of the sticks out there, like the seatbelt law, which appears to not work in some cases because people are still not wearing them. What about some of the carrots? What do you think that we could do better? Maybe it's a better way of saying of inducing people to be aware of safety equipment or things like that on more risky behavior.
And through the chair, I would say, this is Jill Hodges once again, it really starts with education in the school system, and we could have some prevention focuses to bring more awareness around falls in our industries, how to prevent fishermen and carpentry and construction accidents, elders who fall wearing ice cleats and certain things they could do in their home to prevent falls. There are some national models that are in place that, especially around elder falls, that have been proven successful. As for kids and helmets, I'm trying to think of the right word, but it's more of a performance-based model. When you're caught being good wearing a helmet, you get a dollar-off coupon to the local ice cream shop. But it really is going to have to be a culture change, and with the various cultures that we have in Alaska, it'll probably have to be specific to different communities.
Thank you. And I wasn't asking a question for any other reason than to know how to better respond. Thank you.
Jill, I have one question. Are there rehab centers or providers that have specialty places that you go to if there's a traumatic brain injury? I remember talking to a community health center that was thinking of expanding to include a residential treatment for traumatic brain injury, but what do we have generally in Alaska? Anything specific, or is it mostly the large providers that just have this set up? Or,
well, very good question. When it comes to brain injury, there's very standard care, and it starts from the accident on. So the emergency medical system in Alaska does a very good job of getting the person to an acute center, and from there, what you're trying to do is prevent further injury to the brain. So you're trying to prevent swelling, prevent bleeding, prevent further or long-lasting damage. Once you're in the hospital setting, though, in Alaska, there's very few post-acute rehabilitation programs. And when I mean a post-acute, I mean a place to go in the community where you have access to speech, physical therapy, occupational therapy, counseling, maybe some alternative therapies. What happens right now with Alaskans, if they're lucky, they get sent out of state to Harborview, Wisconsin, New Hampshire, Texas, and they're at Colorado. They're able to access rehabilitation. But for many Alaskans, they go home, they're told to rest, and they're left at the ability that they're sent home with. We know with brain injury that you can recover slowly, but really having access to rehab improves your outcomes. And I'll just tell a personal story. My family has had two brain injuries. One, my uncle, he was in a coma for a year before he passed away. And my younger brother at age 16 fell off the back of a car messing around with his friends and sustained a severe traumatic brain injury. He was living in California at the time, and there was a brain injury rehab center just 20 minutes from my family's home. And when my brother was still in a coma, we had a doctor from outside the hospital come and share that once your son wakes up and he's able to walk out of the hospital, he's just going to go home and you'll be left out there. There is such thing as brain injury rehabilitation if you want to learn more. And I can't even describe the support that they were able to give to our family and learning how to live with his new behaviors and his new abilities. And the recognition that brain injury in the first 2 years, it's all about rehab, it's all about recovery, it's all about becoming, trying to get back to where you were. And then after that, it really is ongoing support to keep your brain functioning at a level that keeps you as independent and success-based as possible. And so in Alaska, we really do need a post-acute rehab center. We need a residential program so that you could be living in a supportive environment but still be in a recovery model. What's happening right now, if you're not able to go home and your family can't support you, you're getting put in an assisted living home and you're just basically sitting there with no real goal to get you back to the best functioning level as possible.
Thank you, Jill. Is there any more questions for Jill? If not, we'll go to Nancy Michelson in Palmer. You in line, Nancy?
Yes, I am. Excuse my voice today. I stayed up too late last night. But thank you, Co-Chairman Keller and Heron, for and the rest of you on the House Health and Social Services Committee for hearing this bill and for allowing me to comment on it. This bill is very important to me, my family, and I believe to all Alaskans. And why do I say that? Well, first, it's important to me and my family because my husband and I live in our home with our 25-year-old son who became severely disabled with brain injury 6 years ago. He's mainly non-communicative and immobile, but he hears and understands everything we say. He shows emotion. He gets excited to do things. He can verbalize a little. And he has his way of communication. He also has hopes of someday regaining his speech and always improving his cognition. As Jill said, this is really possible. After his brain injury, we went outside to a specialty brain injury rehab center. And when we returned, it took a long time before we felt we had established a team of care as far as medical providers, therapists, caregivers, etc., that could really give our son the most we were hoping he would find. We still have work to do on that front, and we deeply, deeply believe that awareness among Alaskans of what brain injury looks like, its symptoms, the need of brain injury survivors, and the opportunities that they can get in the future if they have the proper support We believe that helps all of us. I mean, it helps us personally in our family. But we feel it helps all Alaskans also because of the occurrence, the high occurrence of brain injury in Alaska, as you already heard mentioned, and the importance, I believe, of the fabric of our society, especially when we think of these returning war vets. We welcome them home with open arms as heroes, and I think the least we can do is improve our abilities to take care of their brain injuries and help them recover and truly become the best they can be. And then prevention. Most TBIs can be prevented, as you have already heard, by wearing helmets, making sure everyone's belted into cars, and recognizing one thing that's really important is, you might have heard of the IMPACT program, but if we can recognize potentially damaging sports injuries, especially among young athletes, we can protect them from further injury. Declaring March Brain Injury Awareness Month assists in each of these points I've said, and I just want to thank all of you because I believe you're to be commended for a vote to pass it into law, and thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Nancy. Seeing no questions for Nancy, thank you, Trevor and Danny. You did a good job. We got the point. So thank you for presenting it. Is there anybody in the room that would like to add further comments? If not, public testimony is closed. And does the committee have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First comment is that I can tell you in fishing vessels and engine rooms, double-walled felt hat helps traumatic brain injury going through lots of closed spaces. The one thing I haven't heard is, I mean, we've heard brain injury described as traumatic. We've heard fetal alcohol syndrome, and we've heard stroke, and we've heard prevention only about traumatic brain injuries. We haven't heard anything about proposals to educate or to work on prevention of stroke or the others. So I don't have a amendment at this time, but I just would like for future reference to bring up that if we're going to concentrate on traumatic brain injury and that's our prevention and that's our target, then I think that we probably ought to be targeting that. Or if we're going to widen it to Brain Injury Awareness Month, then we probably should be targeting the full range of brain injuries for prevention and treatment as have been identified by the sponsor. I'm fully in support of this this bill or this resolution, and I think that, you know, we all know that brain injury is a tough one. I'm not sure how we get the biggest bang for the buck on that, whether we, you know, try and talk to the people of the state of Alaska about fetal alcohol syndrome being brain injury and stroke being brain injury, and what do we do in our lives to prevent those things as well? And so but I'm fully in support of that resolution.
Thank you for those thoughtful comments. I agree. And in light of the fact that we're in March, it probably would be good just to press on if the committee wishes, but your points are really well taken. I mean, FAS, FAE, real big issues for Alaskans. I also would like to comment that I was going to ask earlier, you know, if anyone had any personal experience with brain injury, and then you made your comment about the fishing boats, and I thought, well, maybe I better not go there. It's not something we admit real readily, you know, especially when you read this. Any other comments on the on the topic? Representative Lynn, I'm sorry.
You know, I fully support this resolution, but this doesn't seem to go anyplace. We designate the month. Most of the resolutions we pass in the legislature have a list of addressees, and this just simply says that we establish Brain Injury Month, but what happens after this moves out of the legislature? Go into a filing cabinet someplace? What do we do with the product here? I didn't hear anybody address that.
All right. if we will, if you like, we can open up testimony again and ask the sponsors.
Your call, Mr. Chair.
I don't mind.
But you know, this can happen to any of us. Just 2 weeks ago, I took my wife up to the beauty shop up in the valley. I came back out with her, got her in the car, closed the door, and I heard this tremendous crash next to me. And they were repairing the roof, the motel out in the valley there. And this huge hammer had slid off the roof. And fell right down where I'd been standing when I closed the door to the passenger side of my car. Had I been there, I'd be the subject of one of these. And so we're just one accident away, all of us, from that happening. It was a huge claw hammer. But again, what do we do with this other than pass it? Anybody have any ideas?
Mr. Chairman, I might speak.
Go ahead, Representative Coghill.
It's been my experience that the Brain Injury Network and others would take the legislators' concerns and their proclamation as part of an additional authority to begin to educate people. And it would also be used if there are bills going through the legislature that would deal with this issue as part of a legislator's voice, the general legislature's voice. So it becomes a tool that can be used by those who will pick it up and use it. And my guess is the Alaska Brain Injury Network will intend to do that. I suppose when we deal with other issues that are like the primary seatbelt law or others, that we will see this as part of the backup. So that's how I've seen it used in the past. I've seen it used in ways to educate people, whether it's on a news public service announcement or something like that. So I think with the governor's proclamation, the legislators speaking out on it by way of this kind of a resolution. So it's just a tool to be picked up and used. If we were going to communicate with the federal government or anything, we would want to have a joint resolution.
Thank you.
What's the wish of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Coghill.
I make a motion that we pass out of committee Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 1 dealing with the relating to establishing March 09 as Brain Injury Awareness Month. Version A with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objections, SCR 1 version 26 LS 0268 /alpha moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. And if there's anything else that has to come before the committee, I don't see, so we'll adjourn at 3:40.